Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Cannabis Expert Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. John Zamparo. Please go ahead, Mr. Zamparo.
All right. Thank you, Valerie. Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us on today's call. For those I haven't met, my name is John Zamparo. I'm a retail and consumer analyst here at CIBC, and I cover the cannabis sector as well. We're delighted to have you join us today. We'll be providing a deep dive on data within the cannabis industry. In particular, we're looking at recent industry trends from the perspective of consumers, retailers, and producers. I always like to say there's never a dull moment in this industry, but it's an especially interesting time. Right now, there's so much going on. There's, of course, the iconic 420 holiday, but like in many other industries, COVID-19 has thrown a real curveball at the sector. And it's created questions about consumer stockpiling, changes in consumption, and now for some restricted operations in different parts of the continent. So today we'll get an inside look at both the B2B and B2C trends underway in North America. It's my pleasure to introduce our two guests today. I'll start with Claire Maloney. Claire is the Director of Operations at LeafLink, the cannabis industry's largest B2B online marketplace, which connects cannabis brands with retailers. Fun fact, Claire was employee number one at LeafLink and recently spearheaded LeafLink's latest offering, LeafLink Insights. And also joining us today is Liz Connors, the Director of Analytics at Headset, a cannabis intelligence company that uses retail-level data to provide real-time market insights. Liz was previously a data scientist in the broader CPG and retail industries, and she also does work with researchers at the University of Pittsburgh and London Business School on heuristics and consumer biases. So Claire and Liz, welcome to both of you, and thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, John.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Great. So let me run through the agenda for this afternoon. Each of Claire and Liz have prepared some slides for us, and they'll walk us through some of the interesting data insights they've come across in their work in recent months, and we'll talk about implications for the broader industry. They'll each get around 10 minutes or so. Then I have a list of questions for our guests after that, where we'll cover a few different topics. Now, we have already sent around the slides. If you haven't received them, please email me now. I'll send another copy. And lastly, I'd just like to note that if you do have questions you'd like to ask our guests, we're not able to have a moderator for this call. Traditionally, we would, but because of the massive demand for their services at the moment, we're going to do it this way. So feel free to email me any questions at john.zamparo@cibc.com. That's John with an H, .zamparo@cibc.com. I expect our call today will last approximately 30 to 40 minutes. And with that, let's start the presentations, and I'll turn it over to you, Claire. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks, John. So as John mentioned, I'm Claire Maloney. I'm the Director of Operations at LeafLink, and I've been with the company since we launched back in 2016. So I've been in the industry for a little over 4 years now. And today I'll be talking about the impact of COVID-19 on wholesale cannabis. So if you're following along with the deck, I'm going to the second slide now. So what is LeafLink? LeafLink is the cannabis industry's wholesale marketplace. So essentially the problem that we solve for is that before, dispensary purchasing managers were spending a full day per week calling, emailing, and texting all of their brand sales reps to stock up their stores, and now they can order from all of them in one cart on LeafLink and save that 8 hours a week. On the flip side, brands were managing all of those orders on whiteboards or Google Sheets, for example, and now they can manage all of those orders in one place on LeafLink across all of those teams. So now we have over 1,500 brands and 4,700 retailers on LeafLink, and they're doing $2.2 billion in orders in sales each year through LeafLink now, which represents about 23% of all wholesale orders in the U.S. So on the next slide, we here have a map, and as I mentioned, we're in 25 territories in North America now. And so essentially what we look to do is every time a market begins wholesaling, we'll enter and launch LeafLink. And so, for example, we just signed a new launch partner in Missouri, which is a new state coming online. We also have a joint venture with Canopy Rivers called LeafLink International, and that's how we're looking to expand our international footprint, of course, starting first with Canada, and now we're also looking into markets abroad like Europe and the Caribbean as potential next launch territories. On the next slide, we have a picture of the LeafLink triangle. So this is really how we think about our business model at LeafLink. So we're looking to streamline the entire supply chain across all three corners of this triangle. First is obviously the marketplace, which is how we're streamlining B2B orders. The next is LeafLink Financial, which is how we're streamlining payments. And then LeafLink Logistics, which is how we're streamlining shipments. So So with LeafLink Financial, essentially, obviously in the U.S., it's a very cash-heavy industry. And so we launched in 6 markets last year where we're now able to extend credit to retailers and then also guarantee payments to brands. So really solving a need for them there. And then with LeafLink Logistics, in this industry right now across these markets, delivery times can vary between 2 days and 2 weeks. And so we're looking to do things like guarantee delivery windows and shorten delivery times. So the next topic we'll talk about is the impact of COVID-19 on wholesale. So when we're thinking about this at LeafLink, we're not only drawing on the data that we have from those 23% of all wholesale orders, but also on the conversations that we have daily with all of our brands and retailers across all these markets, hearing anecdotally how they're doing. So on the next slide, the overall impact of COVID-19. So we've definitely seen a change in purchasing on LeafLink during the course of the last 4 weeks. So I'm sure that Liz at Headset will talk about this as well, but there was a major stock-up event the week of 3/16. So essentially that was when the stay-at-home orders started being announced and consumers rushed to stores to purchase. And so we saw a major stock-up event from retailers who were draining their inventory and needed to stock back up. And then over the 2 weeks following that, there was a decrease in sales on LeafLink, and that was really when retailers were figuring out operationally how they were going to continue to operate, whether it meant social distancing in their stores or if it meant that they needed to set up delivery or curbside pickup. And a lot of them were uncertain of what demand would look like too, right, because this is the first time that something like this has ever hit the cannabis industry. We have seen an uptick in sales over the week of April 6th and then also this week. I'll talk a little bit more about 420, but we are expecting that retailers are now starting to understand their demand a bit more and also begin to stock up for 420. So product impact, what are retailers stocking during COVID-19? So during that major stock-up event, the week of March 16th, we saw 3 categories grow in market share, and those were packaged flower, gummies, and disposable cartridges. So this really makes sense because this is the type of thing that most consumers are familiar with and looking to stock up on, especially when a diverse range of consumers were flocking to stores. We saw niche categories like concentrates fall a bit more on our platform. So think of things like live resin or shatter, for example. Those dipped a bit in market share. So this is really what retailers were stocking up right after the stock-up event in stores. And then going over to our market impact slide, slide 8, this is looking at 5 different markets on LeafLink because I really wanted to profile how COVID-19 was impacting different markets differently. So the first 2 markets on the left here are Oklahoma and Michigan. And so those are 2 of our fastest growing markets right now on LeafLink and have been over the last 6 to 12 months. And those are newer markets that came online. So Oklahoma went medical in 2018, but a lot of their brands and retailers started up in 2019. And as you can see, while there was a stock-up event the week of March 16th, it's really essentially continued over the last 2 weeks. And from talking with Oklahoma brands, a lot of them are really ramping up for 420 right now. So essentially their expansion has pushed through COVID-19 impacts. In Michigan, we saw a stock up and a bit of a dip, but then a resurgence faster than some of our more mature markets. And a lot of that, too, is because in Michigan, they went recreational last year and a lot more licenses have come online in the last 6 months, which is really driving expansion in that state as well. Then we got into California, Nevada, and Colorado, which are varying degrees of more maturity. We consider California in the growth category right now. There might be a typo on your slide. We actually started seeing recreational licenses come on in 2018, not 2019. And so there's been a solid 2 years of growth on LeafLink for California. And as you can see, the trend here really followed the pattern that we saw across our whole platform. A piece of this, too, is that in California, since it is a bit more mature, brands there have also started requiring that retailers stock up earlier for 420 now. And so that spike in on the week of March 16th was a blend of COVID and also retailers stocking up for 420. So some stores are just well stocked right now, not looking to stock up again for 420. In Nevada, that's been one of our hardest hit markets, and that's a mix of them losing all this tourism because of the lack of travel during COVID-19, but also the fact that the state switched to a delivery-only model. And so stores can't remain open, and they have more limited means for how to get products out to consumers. And so they've definitely been the hardest hit here, as you can see, and haven't rebounded as much as other markets have. And then Colorado is one of our most mature markets. It was the first market we launched back in 2016. And as you can see, it's generally followed the same trend, but they also have had certain areas hit a bit more by tourism, especially in areas where winter sports are popular. So looking at the next slide, which is brand impact, I also wanted to drill down to the brand level because I think it's really important to look at not only how different markets are impacted, but also how different brands are handling this to give some more insight and color into those states. So in Arizona on the left here, we see an example of a brand here that's in an essential market. So Arizona was deemed essential and has been really pretty stable throughout COVID-19. And this is an example of a brand that had flower and concentrate inventory and cartridge inventory, which were really popular during the stock-up period. And they actually saw their sales go up by 52% during this time. And they had customers who were retailers who hadn't shopped from them in over a year coming back and asking for flower because they were so desperate for inventory. The second example here is in Nevada. So this is, again, the delivery-only market, reduced tourism, and their sales went down 21% for this company here because of all the factors going on. And then on the right here, we have a Canadian brand that had difficulty finding cartridges for their company because of the Chinese supply chain issues. And that was actually something that was felt across a number of our markets. And they had a dip in sales of 60% between that and COVID-19. I will say that we've generally seen that supply chain issue rebound now, and generally brands have been able to adapt to this across the platform anyway. Either they've sourced locally, or in some cases, some brands have even borrowed some excess from other brands to get through this time. So they've been very adaptable throughout it, and now those products are starting to come back online anyway. Flipping to the next slide, 420 past and present. So, of course, looking forward, we want to know, is 420 going to happen this year? And overall, if you flip to the next slide, the answer on our side is that, yes, we do believe 420 is going to happen. The only thing is that purchasing looks much different this 420 than last 420. So as you can see, the blue line here is 420 last year, and then the green line is this year. And essentially, we have looked at our platform data in years past, and generally purchasing managers will start stocking up for 420 a full month in advance before the holiday. And a lot of that is because brands will not only insert deadlines so that they can make sure that they can fulfill and ship all of those orders in time for 420, but also so that retailers can get their hands on really popular products during those times. So as you can see, the blue line, week 14 last year, that's around early April that retailers started stocking up. And then there's a dip as it's approaching and those deadlines start happening. This year, since a lot of retailers were stocking up the week of 3/16 and then the resulting dip, there's now a higher stock up period, much closer to 4/20, which is a bit different than last year. And for context as well, on our platform, we had our biggest sales days ever, biggest Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the week of 3/16 during that stock-up period. And this week, our Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday were our second largest ordering days on the platform in history on LeafLink. So there's definitely stocking up going on right now in advance of 4/20. And so interested to see what the next few weeks look like, especially leveraging some of Headset's data on the consumer side as well. I also wanted to point out here, too, that the market share for the most popular products has shifted a bit this year compared to last year. But a lot of that is driven by those expansion markets like Michigan, Ohio, Florida, where flower is really popular, that are really driving this as the most popular category. In some of our more mature markets, cartridges are still number one. So flipping to the last slide, this is thank you. Thanks so much for listening in on this presentation. I also wanted to point out that a lot of this data came from our new data arm called LeafLink Insights. And so if you have any questions about the data we talked about in this presentation, definitely feel free to email us at insights@leaflink.com.
Okay, that's great, Claire. Thank you for that. Lots of interesting takeaways. I do have some questions on that, but I'll hold them until the end of our presentation. So now we'll turn it over to Liz at Headset. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to be here to talk about some of the sales trends we're seeing in the cannabis space. Like you said, I'm Liz Connors. I'm our Director of Analytics at Headset, and we're a cannabis data intelligence company. We have three main product offerings. Our first one is called Insights, which is a market intelligence product. In Insights, we provide daily product-level information on cannabis sales to help producers, manufacturers, investors, and retailers understand the cannabis market space. You can use Insights to find information on sales, brand rankings, packaging trends, as well as pricing and discounting trends to drive strategic decisions in this space. You can even analyze market events like 420 or the impact of COVID-19 on the cannabis industry. We create these forecasts using data from our sample of participating retailers, which today is just under 1,000 across the United States and Canada. This is the data that I'm going to be using today for our presentation. We do have two other products. The next one is called Retailer. And Retailer is a business intelligence tool for cannabis retailers to assist them with tracking their sales, optimizing their inventory, and streamlining their operations. And then finally, we have a product called Bridge. This is a vendor-managed inventory tool. The tool allows retailers to directly share their data with vendors in order for both to better manage the store's inventory and get the products where they need to be so that they can avoid stockouts and overstocks. So moving on, today what I want to look at is the impact of COVID-19 on retail sales and consumer trends and how this all of the stay-at-home orders have transformed the marketplace over the last 6 weeks. So if you go to my fourth slide, what you'll see, first we're going to look at a few Canadian provinces. So here I'm showing the daily change in sales growth compared to similar weekdays in January and February of 2020 for the median private retailer. We can see that March started out relatively predictable with sales trends slightly up in all provinces. Around March 10th, we begin to see consumers rush to stores and stock up. It seems as consumers rush to buy toilet paper and yeast, they also rush to purchase cannabis. After the initial surges in demand, we see demand fall to about normal levels in Alberta and British Columbia and below normal levels in Ontario. We also see this gap in the graph for Ontario sales, followed by a pretty large drop. I think Claire alluded to a bit of this, but much of this is driven by changing regulations in Ontario, just like there were in Nevada. So in Ontario, the government removed cannabis from the essential business list and then added it back. Currently, Ontario private retailers are operating via curbside and delivery, and stores are still working to get that functionality running. So we expect to see private retail sales in Ontario rebound as more stores are able to take these business changes into their operations. If you move to the next slide, what we'll do is look at the United States. Same methodology here, but we're looking at adult use sales in five U.S. states. While all states saw the demand surges around March 16th, we see very different reactions afterward. States where cannabis is driven by tourism were hardest hit. In Nevada, Clark County, which is home to Las Vegas, accounts for 80% of adult use sales. And after the casinos were closed on March 17th, demand plummeted. We see a similar trend in Colorado, where tourism for spring break at ski resorts is a significant driver in demand. On a happier note, we see sales in Washington and Oregon, which are not frequented by tourists this time of year. I live in Washington. It is not a great place to visit in March. So we see these states actually above slightly normal levels. And I wanted to bring this up because I think the distinction between the markets is important. Cannabis hasn't seen a recession since its legalization, and we're looking for data points to help forecast the impact of a potential negative business cycle on cannabis sales. Seeing sales increase in Washington and Oregon despite the increasing unemployment, I think helps us understand how consumers may react. For example, in Washington, we've been in stay-in-residence orders now for a little over a month. And we see that sales volumes are slightly above normal. Further, yesterday's sales, which actually aren't part of this graph, they just came in to me this morning, were about 25% over average. Yesterday was when the stimulus checks began hitting American wallets. I believe this increased demand shows us how consumers could shop when funds are tight. I would like to caution this could be slightly confounded by the upcoming holiday of 420 as demand increases for that, and we'll look at some 420 here in later slides. Moving on to the next slide, I want to point out how changes in government regulations and messaging impact consumer behavior. Here we compare stores in Denver to the rest of Colorado. The city of Denver originally ordered all adult use stores to close starting on March 24th. This order was reversed the morning of March 24th before it even went into effect. However, on March 23rd, consumers were anticipating stores to be closed the next morning, so we see really large stock ups in Denver. So now we've looked at demand that can change due to tourism trends. We've also looked at how government messaging is driving some of these demand trends. On the next slide, I want to point out what this unpredictable behavior means for some of the retailers. So on the next slide, we see the surges in demand have led to sales changes, in the average inventory carry levels. So here we're looking at the average weeks of carry of inventory across a few of the states and provinces. We see the average inventory carry declined in states with demand and increased in Nevada. Nevada has seen their sales plummet without those tourists and with the delivery-only restrictions. So the amount of product that retailers have in their back room is enough to get them through almost twice the normal amount of time, even without reordering. So these trends show the impact that retail sales will have on producers and manufacturers as people go to order. Like Claire pointed out, orders in Nevada were substantially down due to the decrease in demand. Moving on to the next slide, I want us, as we think about inventory, to look at some of these trends and specifically how difficult it would be for retailers to do ordering as it sits today. So what you're looking at first is a graph that shows the percent change from the prior day in January and February of 2020. We see this really predictable pattern of sales. Sales slightly rise throughout the week, cresting on Fridays. They stay relatively high on Saturdays. This trend has existed as long as the market has been open, with relatively little changes save for holidays. If you go to the next slide, however, you can pretty visibly see the fabric that holds together sales demand trend just unravel it, it seems. So we no longer have a place where it's easy to forecast upcoming demand. The stores may make large orders. They may stock out. I think they're, in general, having trouble knowing what to expect consumers to do day to day. If we go to the next slide, you'll see it's not just the daily sales trends that have changed. When we look at hourly sales data, we see that sales have shifted to morning hours. This graph shows the percent of the week's total sales during each hour of the day on weekdays. And we see that post-COVID, much of the evening hour sales have shifted in the mornings and afternoons, likely due to commuting behavior changes. But if we go to the next slide, we'll see how some of their purchases have changed as well. So here we review the change in sales trends across category in the U.S. Edibles have seen remarkable growth during this time. Edibles are a convenient way for consumers to consume cannabis without worrying about their lung health. We also see edibles gain share during the vaping crisis in late summer and early fall. In contrast, on the right of this graph, we see pre-rolls and top negative growth. About pre-rolls, they're usually shared among friends. Passing and joint around in a circle is a pretty common consumption method. With social distancing in place, this has pretty much come to a halt. Even as people begin to reemerge into the world after the stay-at-home orders have been lifted, I imagine we might see some of this decreased demand continue, especially in the traditional 1 gram pre-roll, which is usually a shared item. Instead, what we might see is manufacturers that create multi-packs of smaller, more personally sized joints, maybe in the quarter or half gram ranges, see their sales fare slightly better. Additionally, you'll see topicals there on the right. Cannabis topicals are pricey with ASPs between $40 and $80. These are generally luxury items. And I also think with fewer people leaving their homes, not so many people care about wrinkle cream during this time. No one really can see your wrinkles from your Zoom videos and all of these conference calls. So it just might not be something that's top of mind to consumers while they're still at home. Moving on to the next slide, I want to point out, on the previous slide, our sales were up about 13%. That isn't unilaterally seen across all package sizes. So what we found is that larger package sizes are seeing bigger increases. This is especially true during the week of March 16th. We've heard stories of manufacturers shifting their product into more eighths and ounces and away from smaller packages and seeing sales boosts during this time. Aside from the general consumer stock-ups, consumers are just out and about less. They're making larger purchases less frequently. So larger package sizes might be particularly appealing. I think this is one of the reasons that as we think about the trends that are happening now, we need to evaluate the products that we have in our portfolio, as well as how we think consumer demand is going to change so that we can get the right products where they need to be as consumers change their purchase behaviors. Finally, let's talk 420. So if you move to the next slide, like I said before, we saw 420 sales on we saw sales yesterday on 415 increase about 25% on average compared to 414. That's pretty uncommon for a Wednesday to a Thursday. This is likely driven by stimulus checks hitting wallets as well as the 420 sales starting to take place. Here on this graph, we see the average daily discount today versus 2019 in the state of Washington. You can see that discounts have started trending up in the last few days as retailers grip their promotions and sales to entice customers to come out early and avoid those lines and create social distancing. So that's all I have for today. If you're interested in keeping up with the market, we have our Insights Premium product, which is a market data product that created everything you saw today. It gives real-time insights and includes information on sales trends, pricing trends, unit volume, brand details, product details, and even now has a demand planning section so that you can plan for unusually unusual events like COVID and usually unusual events like 420. In addition, we have a blog that we update pretty frequently with information about COVID's impact on cannabis trends, and there's a link in here. And we also have our Insights Pulse product. This is a free product and gives some high-level insights into category trends state by state or province by province, and the data is refreshed about once a month. You can sign up for free on our website. And there's also some contact information if you'd like to know more about anything you saw today.
All right, great. Thank you, Liz. That's very informative as well. Why don't we get some questions? Claire, let's start with you. You mentioned order lead time. I wanted to dive a bit deeper on that. So can you remind us or just give us a sense of how much lead time do retailers typically need on order fulfillments? And I mean, in other words, if you wanted to have products ready for April 20th, when would you normally be ordering? And were there any peculiarities this year? Were retailers reluctant to order because of uncertainty, or were they able to adequately stock up in time for that mid-March surge?
Absolutely. Great question. So typically, aside with COVID aside, 420 aside, we typically think of the delivery window as anywhere between 2 days and 2 weeks across all of our markets. That's why we're bringing in LeafLink Logistics to help standardize that, because obviously it really varies. But the patterns that we see are that in more mature markets, typically brands will create inventory that's ready to ship at any time, whereas in newer markets or markets that are more rural, for example, they're typically making inventory to order, and that's when it can take up to 2 weeks. So if it's a more mature market, has inventory available, that will typically take 5 to 7 business days. Also, in some markets where distribution is really relevant, they'll also have set delivery times and windows for different regions, and so retailers will know when they need to order based on those delivery windows. Given COVID-19, I do think that if you're looking at our wholesale data and then the Headset retail data, there's a really reactive time when retailers were stocking up because of the sudden surge of consumers flooding their stores, whereas typically they're typically trying to plan in advance like they would for 420. And as I mentioned, for 420, we typically see that purchasing managers start stocking up a full month in advance, and definitely at least 2 weeks in advance.
Okay, interesting. Liz, let's do one for you. You mentioned beverages in one of your slides, and maybe unrelated to COVID, but more about general trends recently. What are you seeing on the beverage sales in more advanced states? And the reason I ask is this is a pretty key topic for those of us north of the border, as several producers are getting into the beverage market. So what do you find is winning with consumers when it comes to beverages, and what's been the reception among consumers for a category that historically hasn't had that much presence in the industry?
Yeah, for sure. So beverages generally are between about 1% and 2% of market sales in most of our more mature markets. That's held pretty steady over the last couple of years. And we see Canadian markets come in with a similar market share for beverages. I would say for beverages trends, we are starting to see smaller package sizes become more common. Initially, there were a lot of 100-milligram beverages, so just 100-milligram soda, which really appealed to a particular type of user. I think some of those lower-dose beverages maybe have a wider audience. Something interesting that we did find during COVID is that the basket penetration, or the percent of transactions that a product is present in, so the basket penetration for beverages went up. We believe that's because beverages could very well be an impulse buy when you're in stores. So you're walking around grabbing things and perhaps you grab another beverage. It becomes a passenger product. I think that could be very interesting as a lot of people are starting to move to online orders and delivery. I think a lot of it might rely on retailers having websites that promote products like these to be added to baskets. I think that could be something that that could make some changes in the way that consumers are buying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, marketing is its own separate issue, but it's going to be fascinating to watch. Okay, great. So why don't we pivot back to COVID, and this one's for you, Claire. Basically, no one in, forget cannabis, just retail or CPG, has built their business for an event like this. So generally, when you speak to retailers or brand reps in your network, what's their most pressing issue, do you find? Is it figuring out what brands to sell? Is it how to manage inventory? Is it as simple as staying solvent and access to capital, or is it something completely different from those?
Great question. So I think that generally across the board, the biggest challenge right now is inventory. So retailers, just like all of us are on this call, are wondering what is going to happen in the next few weeks in terms of consumer demand for cannabis. Obviously, the industry has been doing well considering that it's been deemed essential in many places and still operating. And we saw some of those sales numbers they're expecting 420. But it's just really hard to predict exactly what demand looks like. And it's difficult to place orders based on that. And so as you saw, it's a little bit more jolty in terms of the trends that you see because of that. And then on the brand side, the inventory challenge is more operational. So they're running with much smaller, like, skeleton crews who are looking to fulfill orders. People are working remotely in a lot of these places where they all used to work together in one place. And then delivery windows have changed because of social distancing. So there's a lot of changing around operations to meet the inventory demands from retailers. But at the same time, I will say one thing we always talk about internally is that this is one of the most adaptable industries we've ever seen because they've been handed so many different regulations over the last 2 years. And so they've adapted and really pretty amazingly just in a couple of weeks been able to stand up a whole different set of operations and are getting ready for 420 now.
That's a great point. It is a resilient industry. It's faced a lot of roadblocks. I think it still probably does in most markets. And I'm glad to hear the answer is not staying solvent. It sounds like operational headaches are first and foremost, and that's a good thing. Let's move back to you, Liz. I wanted to ask about elasticity of demand. There was some data that came out from the Ontario Cannabis Store this morning that suggested that online orders are spiking and that perhaps this is a product that is as sticky as alcohol or tobacco. And I mean, take this in the broader context of we've seen material layoffs and more eye-popping jobless claims numbers out this morning. So if consumers have less to spend, are they buying as much? Are we going to see a shift towards lower price items or more focus on value? How do you think about that?
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said in the presentation, I do think looking at Washington and Oregon, for instance, where demand really isn't influenced by tourism, seeing that demand is just a little bit high even for the season is a pretty good, at least initial indicator. We just did analysis that we're going to put on the blog either today or tomorrow, looking at one-eighth packages of flower. And we have not yet seen premium brands or higher priced brands see decreased demand. So I think that's another good trend there. We see average baskets actually slightly trending up during this time. I do want to provide a small cautionary note in the U.S. compared to Canada. In the U.S., most of the retailers cannot accept credit cards. You have to pay in cash. You have to either take it out of the ATM or get it from the bank. And so as we think about how consumers spend, this isn't something that someone could put on a credit card, which could change some of the purchase behavior a bit there compared to Canada where you can. But, you know, cannabis is a pretty low-priced item even compared to alcohol. And so I think at least so far to me, the trends have been actually slightly upward during this time when we try to normalize for everything that's going on.
Interesting. Okay. Let's talk about vaping. This question's for both of you. So before COVID hit, the industry had begun to move past the vaping scandal, and we've seen different names for it, Vapegate, Vappy. I've also seen eValley. Regardless of the name, though, consumers backed away from vaping products late last year because of lung injuries associated with illegally produced and unregulated vaping products. So is this still impacting consumer behavior, or is there more awareness now that this was from illicit sources? And given the fact that the current pandemic particularly relates to lung impact, what have you seen from this category lately? Claire, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So in terms of what we've seen on our platform, Vapegate, as we call it, hit in September of last year. And so the two quarters prior to that, we saw a 2% increase in vape sales in Q2, followed by a 3% increase in Q3. And then in Q4, we saw a dip by 9% across our market. So we did feel that late last year. But then we really believe that because of education and knowing that a lot of that was coming from illegal markets, that's really seen a resurgence. And so Q1, we saw 34% growth in vapes on our platform. So we believe that we've recovered from that. Would love to hear Liz's take on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my data is probably pretty similar, Claire. Definitely during August, September, October, we saw sales relatively or significantly decline, especially in markets like Washington, which did a ban on flavored vapor pens, and that lasted until February. And then places like Massachusetts, where there was a total ban on vaping products. We see them mostly recovered. I think that sales are just a little bit below what's normal. And when we dove into it deeper and looked at consumer trends recently, what we found is that people that were casual vapor pen consumers, so they purchased a lot of other items, but they also bought vapor pens, and they didn't buy them super often. We have seen their sales step back a little bit. But the people that are heavier vapor pen consumers, they were buying a lot of it before, they don't seem to be relatively impacted by it. So I would say, for the most part, everything is kind of back to where it was. Maybe a handful of consumers have shifted, but they weren't the consumers that were driving most of the demand as it was.
Okay, interesting. We've got a question from our audience, so I'll jump to that. Do you expect to see an increase in sales with payments coming from government relief programs? And feel free to comment on either Canada or the U.S., but just generally, what do you tend to see when government relief programs have been enacted in the past, with the caveat that, you know, we've not seen anything like this? But what would you expect to see here?
Yeah, I can kind of talk to that. We saw sales up yesterday. Compared to the day before, which was a pretty unseasonal, so even when we adjust for kind of the difference between a Wednesday and a Tuesday, we do see sales were up. I think that that could be due to some of these stimulus checks hitting wallets for sure. So I think that it probably could, as much as it increases many things around it, I think it probably could lead to increased cannabis sales for sure. I'm not sure that there's much historical data to go on except for literally what's happened in the last couple of days. But I do think that probably will have at least some of the spend in these places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think just to echo Liz, we haven't seen much of that just because it was so recent. Of course, as I mentioned, we had our best Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this week so far with purchasing on the retailer side. But with 420 coming up, it's a little bit hard to tell which is because of 420 and which is because of the stimulus checks. Although I think if you just look back in history, people often tend to spend stimulus checks in the way that they normally would on products that they normally purchase. So considering that cannabis is a typical spend for some of these consumers, overall optimistic that some of it will go towards cannabis.
Okay, great. Let's pivot to Canada specifically. You're both holed up in New York and Seattle, respectively, but have there been any trends in Canada that have surprised you, either related to COVID or leading up to 420 or just generally since we legalized derivative products basically a few months ago? Claire, why don't you start?
Sure. So I think for us, the most noticeable difference has been the maturity of the companies that are launching in Canada. So even though Canada has only been around for a short time, a lot of the companies that are launching are well-funded and very mature in compared to some of early-stage companies when we were first launching back in the U.S. And I think a lot of that is partially access to funding. And then it's also that we're able to look at other states, et cetera, that have gone before and then learn from what they've done. And so overall, really excited about some of these new companies that we're seeing in Canada. And I think, too, what's interesting is that we're starting to see consolidation in the U.S. as well across retail chains and then across brands that are emerging. And so this is a trend that's just emerging here that we've already seen in Canada.
And Liz, any thoughts there from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially as the Cannabis 2.0 products come into the market, I was surprised how quickly Canada started to look like the U.S. It really only took a month or two before market shares were relatively similar to the trends that we see in the United States, especially for vapor pens and edibles. Edibles are still climbing up there, but vapor pens have settled at about a level that's pretty similar to the United States. So I think that kind of goes to show that perhaps consumer preference is in a place where we understand it. And as new markets open up, we can use our prior markets to predict what could happen in those. I think the thing that is most interesting to me about Canada is because there are fewer LPs, there are much fewer products in an average store in Washington, for instance. I think there's about 4,000 SKUs stocked. In Canada, it is nowhere near that. You're talking a couple hundred. And so when you think about a consumer in a store, problems that come from things like paradox of choice, where you have a lot of decisions to make, a lot of products in front of you. In Canada, that's relatively limited. And so I'm interested to see how some of the brand loyalty works out in Canada compared to the United States, given that there just are those fewer products.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Just a couple more. Let's talk about CBD. It was such a huge topic following the passage of the Farm Bill. It seems fairly quiet nowadays. I suppose the FDA has bigger fish to fry. But what has been happening with CBD sales amidst the pandemic? Hopefully people aren't consuming it as some sort of antiviral, though perhaps they are using it to alleviate stress. So what have you seen here? Let's start with you, Liz.
Yeah, absolutely. So we cover CBD sales as they're sold in marijuana dispensaries. So in non-inhalable products especially, there are a lot of products that are combined CBD, THC, and there are products that are very CBD heavy with just a bit of THC. So those products we see acting fairly similar to the rest of the market around them. We haven't seen a big jump in their market share or anything like that. Initially, they gained a lot of market share through 2018. It kind of leveled off in 2019, and we see it staying at about those similar trends. So it doesn't look like people are rushing to buy it any more than they were before, but it also doesn't look like the population really has waned. I think in most states, non-inhalable products that contain at least some CBD are around a third of total sales volume. So it's still a very common product to find for sure.
Okay, great. Any thoughts from you, Claire?
Yeah, I think to piggyback off of that, when we're looking exclusively at dispensary purchasing data from retailers in this space, a lot of markets were previously not allowed to sell hemp-based or non-cannabis CBD products, and that's only recently starting to change. So we actually have a task force at LeafLink that's looking at that across our markets, such as Colorado and Oregon, which have recently started allowing it. From talking to retailers generally in this space, they expect CBD products to generally take up a smaller percentage of their shelf space compared to cannabis products. So I don't expect, even in those new markets, for this to necessarily take off during this time, just based on all of my conversations with retailers who are looking into bringing it into their stores.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, understood. So last question for the two of you, and this one's honestly my favorite. I'd love to get a 2020 prediction. There's a ton of uncertainty in the industry and just more broadly for the rest of 2020, but can you give us a prediction for something you expect out of the cannabis industry for the rest of the year? And it can be anything related to consumers, retailers, brands, regulators, whatever you'd like. Claire, why don't you lead us off?
Sure. So I think to me, one of the most exciting things to come out of COVID-19, which is an otherwise difficult and uncertain time, is this concept of markets that are shifting to delivery. So obviously in Ontario, they moved to click and collect, and then Nevada previously had delivery, but it was limited, and now most stores are standing up delivery mechanisms. And I think that it will be really interesting if a lot of these channels become permanent for retailers to sell into consumers, especially in places where they weren't previously available at all. And so one of the things that we think about a lot here is on the LeafLink Insights team, we actually have an analyst who was previously in the alcohol space at Drizly, an alcohol delivery service. And we know that in alcohol, deliveries make up 5% of all alcohol sales, which is a little over $2 billion in sales per year. And during COVID-19, Drizly has seen a 1,600% spike in sales. And so I think what's unique about cannabis is the fact that a lot of delivery wasn't even available before. And now if it becomes available, this new channel, I think, could lead to long-term sales for some of these dispensaries. And so overall, that's something that we've been chiming a lot about here at LeafLink.
That's fascinating. I would have expected an increase, maybe not at that level. And what about you, Liz?
Yeah, I mean, to echo Claire, for sure, I think one of the bigger trends that's going to happen is this shift from shopping in store to the online shopping, the delivery, and even curbside pickup. I think it really changes the way that consumers interact with and learn about products. Especially in a space like cannabis where, you know, alcohol, not a lot of people need told what a rum is anymore. Most of us are fairly aware of the differences between rum and tequila. But I think in the cannabis space, still a lot of consumers that are learning new products coming out. You know, in Canada, there are, suddenly were vapor pens. So the way that brands work to get their messages to consumers might flow less through the bud tender or the sales staff in the actual retail store and need to be done virtually, which isn't really something that had to be thought about much before. I also think during this time, especially with the changes to delivery, we're starting to see average baskets be much larger. And so I think that perhaps even the way that consumers interact, you know, how often does your consumer return? What is your repeat purchase rate? What is product loyalty? I think these things might kind of shift during this time as people try to adapt to the new world that they're living in.
That's interesting. So both predictions for 2020 somewhat related to adapting to different channels and perhaps different categories. And I think, yeah, you could see long-term changes from this. It's one of these instances where you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube and the industry's forced to adapt and it might see long-term changes. Okay, great. So that's all the time we have for today. I want to say thanks again to everyone who joined the call this afternoon. Also, shout out to Caroline Hunter from Canopy Rivers for helping facilitate the call. Both LeafLink and Headset are, of course, portfolio companies of Canopy Rivers. Most of all, a special thank you to our guests, Claire Maloney from LeafLink and Liz Connors from Headset. Thank you both so much. We very much appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks
so much for having us.
Great. Okay. If anyone on the call wants to get in touch with our guests or learn more about either LeafLink or Headset or has any follow-up questions at all, please contact me. I'll be happy to put you in touch. That concludes our call. Have a great day, everyone.